The headlines: Iran's leader says the high turnout in rallies marking the Islamic Revolution anniversary proves Iranians' full support for the Islamic Republic. Iran's president meets students and academics in Peking University in the Chinese capital on the second day of his state visit to Beijing. And the death toll from earthquakes in Turkey and Syria passes 41,000 as the UN initiates its largest ever deployment of emergency medical teams to help some 26 million people in need. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half-hour: leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has hailed the high turnout in rallies marking the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Khamenei said that he felt it was necessary to pay respects to Iranians for taking part in what he called the historic rallies. He described the people's participation nationwide as a valuable show of allegiance to the Islamic Republic. The leader said the nation's voice overshadowed the propaganda launched by the Zionist and American media. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks during his meeting with a group of people from East Azerbaijan province on the occasion of the 1978 uprising against the Pahlavi regime. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has paid a visit to Peking University in the Chinese capital Beijing on the second day of his official tour of the country. During his visit to the university, Raisi held a meeting with scholars and university professors. The Iranian president was also awarded an honorary doctorate degree by the university's authorities. Raisi's visit came a day after he held high-level meetings with Chinese officials, including President Xi Jinping. Officials from both sides also signed 20 cooperation documents.
Ebrahim Raisi is in Beijing for a three-day state visit. That's the first such trip by an Iranian president to China in 20 years. Upon his arrival, he was welcomed by his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping. During their meeting, the two presidents sounded determined to strengthen the two countries' partnership, both vowing to work toward implementation of the 25-year Strategic Cooperation Pact, whatever international conditions be.
We believe that implementing the 25-year cooperation agreement and realizing what agreed between the two countries' officials today to develop bilateral ties can promote regional and global peace and stability. Certainly, relations between Iran and China will not be affected by international developments, since we're determined to develop ties with China in any circumstances.
China will continue to be committed to consolidating and deepening relations with Iran. I'm willing to work with President Raisi to enhance strategic communication and promote the steady and sustained growth of the comprehensive strategic partnership between the two countries.
Of course, the two presidents had much more to say. Raisi said there is still much more for expanding economic and trade collaboration between the two sides, adding that such collaboration would contribute to peace and stability across the globe. On the other side, Xi hailed China's growing solidarity with Tehran, saying the two countries have supported each other in the face of complex global challenges. He added that China supports Iran's efforts to safeguard its national sovereignty and independence and counter hegemony and unilateralism. Political analyst Christopher Hilali says further deepening of Iran-China ties will greatly strengthen the developments of a multipolar world.
The deepening of ties further strengthens the development of a multipolar world against what both the Chinese and the Iranians said was the ongoing hegemony and unilateralism of Western domination, specifically led by the United States.
Iranian academic Sayyid Mohammad Marandi, who is accompanying the Iranian delegation in Beijing, says the West antagonistic attitude has accelerated convergence among Asian nations.
Asia alone, through this natural convergence, which is being pushed forward even faster, largely due to the fact that the United States and the Europeans are constantly antagonizing governments and sanctioning governments, whether it's Russia, whether it's Iran, and increasingly China, and also by constantly trying to prevent India from establishing greater ties with these Asian powers. The United States and Europeans are pushing these countries towards greater convergence at a faster pace.
Tehran-Beijing cooperation has been only growing over the past couple of years. China has now become Iran's largest trading partner, with figures showing volume of trade between the two rose by over 40% in the previous Iranian calendar year, which ended on March the 20th. Moreover, Iran is joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a key regional bloc where China is a co-founder. Iran is also eager to contribute to China's mega project, the Belt and Road Initiative. China and Iran now appear set to take their partnership to the next level for prosperity of their nations.
Rescuers in quake-hit Turkey city of Adıyaman have pulled a 77-year-old woman alive from the rubble where she had been trapped for an astounding 212 hours. The death toll from the 7.8 magnitude earthquake and a powerful aftershock that jolted Turkey and Syria last week has crossed 41,000. The figure is expected to rise as search and rescue operations are still ongoing. On Tuesday, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said the earthquakes were as big as atomic bombs. He also vowed to press on with rescue and recovery efforts until the last person is found from the wreckage of collapsed buildings. The World Health Organization has also described the devastating earthquakes in Syria and Turkey as the worst natural disaster in a century.
We are witnessing the worst natural disaster in the WHO European region for a century, and we are still learning about its magnitude. Its true cost is not known yet. Recovering and healing will take time and a phenomenal effort.
In a virtual press conference from London, the WHO director for the European region said the UN Health Agency has initiated its largest ever deployment of emergency medical teams to help some 26 million people in need of humanitarian aid. The UN has called for international funding to help people in Syria, which has already been devastated by years of foreign-backed militancy and Western sanctions. Almost $400 million aid appeal by the UN would provide much-needed life-saving relief, including shelter, health care, and food for Syrians for around 3 months. On this segment of the program, we move to Ukraine, where Russia says its troops have made further advances in the eastern Luhansk region. The defense ministry said troops have broken through the front line in Luhansk, forcing Ukrainian troops to randomly retreat to a distance of up to 3 kilometers. The ministry did not specify the exact location of the offensive. Ukraine's military has also reported increasingly heavy Russian attacks along the front line, but says the Russians have not yet made any advances. The Ukrainian army chief says the city of Bakhmut and near towns in Donetsk have also been shelled, but Kiev remains in full control of the area. Meanwhile, Ukraine's president has described the situation in Donetsk and Luhansk as very difficult. Volodymyr Zelensky has called for more Western military support in the shortest time possible.
Ukraine must be. The battles are literally for every foot of the Ukrainian land. That is why speed is of the essence. Speed in everything, adopting decisions, carrying out decisions, shipping supplies and training.
Zelensky's call comes as NATO defense ministers are meeting in the Belgian capital, Brussels, for the second day to discuss the war in Ukraine. On Tuesday, they pledged on flagging military support for Kiev. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the alliance will be sending more heavy weapons to Ukraine, but has not yet reached a consensus on warplanes. The German defense minister has been quoted as saying that sending fighter jets to Ukraine is not a focus at the moment. Russia has repeatedly condemned the West for providing Kiev with weapons, saying that the move only prolongs the war. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have our very own Johnny Miller, who's with us from Donetsk. Also, we have independent international affairs analyst Gilbert Doctorow joining us from Brussels. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Johnny. Please give us an update on the recent news we had about the advances in eastern Luhansk region as the fighting continues there. What can you share with us and our viewers?
Well, yes, Russia has been making incremental advances over recent weeks, but the settlements of Barmut and Ugledar, their main objectives at the moment, still held by the Ukrainians, but putting up fierce resistance, huge fortifications in these settlements, but increasingly reports that Ukraine may well be about to, at some point, withdraw from Bakhmut. So we do expect at least Bakhmut to border the Russians at some point, but as I say, the Ukrainians putting up stiff resistance. The Hungarian president recently said that the European Union's policy is that they want peace in the future, but they're waiting for a more advantageous result on the battlefield from Ukraine. But at the moment, it looks like Russia will on the front foot, especially as there's upward of 350,000 Russian soldiers at various points around Ukraine that haven't gone in yet. So there's an expectation from both sides that at some point Russia will launch a major offensive, but that hasn't come yet.
All right, Gibbo, Dr. O, in Brussels, the Ukrainian, Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky has called for more Western military support in the shortest time possible. That call comes as NATO defense ministers are meeting in Brussels for the second day to discuss the war in Ukraine. The issue now seems to be the deployment of fighter jets for Ukraine. Give us your perspective on the stance that NATO countries have right now towards providing more heavy artillery and heavy weaponry to Ukraine.
Well, the talk about fighter jets, even the talk about tanks, is largely an irrelevancy today. It's posturing by the military and political leaders in Western Europe and the United States so that they look good to their domestic audiences and they seem to be committed to Ukraine. The practicality of these commitments at this point is virtually nil. Frankly speaking, the Russians have done a wonderful job of keeping us all on edge and uncertain as to what happens next and whether there will be a big military push, as so many people have predicted, or whether it will continue to be incremental destruction, grinding down of the Ukrainian military forces. What our fellow panelist has just mentioned with respect to the lack of apparent progress territorially on the Russian side is important, but has to be put in the context. The Russians have been playing the Ukrainians in Bakhmut. They have used it as bait to encourage the Ukrainians to fight to the last man. And there may be as many as 20,000 casualties on the Ukrainian side in the defense of Bakhmut. In other words, the Russian emphasis in the region has not been on gaining ground. It has been on destroying the Ukrainian military. And in that sense, it would seem they're very effective. There is talk now of the Ukrainians evacuating what they have left in Bakhmut. And if so, there's also talk among Ukrainian politicians, including a former close advisor to President Kuchma in the past, that the fall of Bakhmut might result in political turbulence in Ukraine that would be the undoing of Mr. Zelensky. So there is a lot of uncertainty. Uncertainty, of course, is not something that the propagandists here in Western Europe want to consider. And so on this morning's BBC and Euronews, we heard that the Russians have announced the beginning of their offensive. Well, the Russians have announced nothing. That's simply an invention of the editorial board of these news agencies in the West. We don't know. We also have information that's quoted in the New York Times that the Russians have stationed a lot of fighter jets, helicopters, and other attack air equipment for what could be a new stage in the war where the Russians use their dominance in the skies to implement a different, wholly new tactic in their conduct of the war. All of these are conjectures. No one really knows what the Russians are about to do next. And that is, I would say, from a military standpoint, absolutely brilliant.
Johnny, let's talk about the military support right now. As Mr. Doctorow mentioned, the practicality of this aid to Ukraine has been close to nil. Russia has said that providing Kiev with weapons is only going to prolong the war. Talk to us more about that aspect.
Well, there's a report in the Daily Telegraph today or yesterday saying that Russia is winning the ammunition war against the West. Also reports that NATO may well be training Ukrainian soldiers in order to fight using less ammunition. So that's one possibility of how this war will ultimately end, with NATO, particularly European countries, no longer having the hardware or the political will to carry on fighting, and therefore a push for a negotiated settlement. There's also, of course, a lot of question marks about these tanks whether the Ukrainians are getting enough training for these tanks. They're supposed to take months, even years, to train in these tanks, but they have been forced to train with much less time. So being sent to the front poorly trained. Also the question marks of these fighter jets. It takes months or particularly years to train pilots. So it's not clear and unlikely, in fact, that these fighter jets will come. And we've also seen from some European countries, Holland and Denmark both said that they won't be supplying these Leopard tanks as well. So I think we'll see more of these stories in the coming weeks, months, of European countries particularly unable to give Ukraine the ammunition or the weapons that it needs to fight the Russians.
Mr. Doctor, one last question before we leave you. Many observers and analysts believe that the reason, basically, that Kiev is not coming down and sitting at the negotiating table with Russia is the fact that Western countries and NATO countries keep providing it with more and more arms. Do you agree with that notion?
Well, the whole scenario on the Ukrainian and NATO side is being manipulated from Washington. So what Mr. Zelensky thinks is almost an irrelevancy here. The Washington is not yet satisfied that it has done sufficient damage to Russia. It is hopeful that by staying on and keeping the Ukrainians in play, they can achieve their goal of the strategic weakening of Russia. That's improbable, but as I said, what Mr. Zelensky wants is not really, at this moment, and in the foreseeable future, is not really going to change the war or bring it to negotiations. That decision will come from Washington in Washington's own good time.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Johnny Miller joining us from Donetsk, and Gilbert Doctorow speaking to us from Brussels. With that, brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar. Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items.
Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iran's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show. This time, our journey took us to the city of Apar in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaron Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications.
Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of a legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages.
In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports.
Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups.
High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Figures from the International Web of Science show Iran was globally ranked 16th in 2019 for its citation work. Numerous knowledge-based companies that provide valuable research and products are born out of university, tech park, and trade zone incubators. These establishments provide platforms that support the creation of new businesses in various fields of advanced tech development as they start up. Incubators offer services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully execute their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. Moreover, incubators are an access channel for services such as workspaces and facilities, technical and legal consultations. These are important for the sustainability of both existing firms as well as innovative startup businesses. The goal is to increase regional economic growth and diversify the national economy. Such development support also strengthens the tech ecosystem and improves investment opportunities. Fire clay is basically mud, but a lighter, stickier type of mud with high alumina content. It's actually everywhere around us, but cannot be seen until it is uncovered from the earth. In its raw form, fire clay is found near or between layers of coal in coal mines. People have been extracting it from the ground for millennia to make bricks, ceramicware, tools, homes, and a whole bunch of other things. Its qualities get even better when it's baked and stiffened. This clay has a great number of industrial uses and lasts nearly forever. Our quest for answers led us to a company that owns and manages at least five mines in Fars province. Esteghlal Abadi company specializes in the extraction of fire clay and the production of clay products. Fire clay is a refractory material that can withstand extremely high temperatures without losing its original properties. There are other types of refractories that this company also produces in small amounts, such as high alumina and melite ceramics. But its main claim to fame is the production of highly useful fire clay. It might be interesting to know that this company is not just a mine owner. It also has three factories. These factories make products like fire brick, washroom items such as sinks, and industrial ceramics. Its production facilities can make large amounts of ceramic parts that are used in various fields such as blast furnaces for coke, iron, and steel productions. Because fire clay is heat-resistant, this material presents excellent qualities for outdoor flooring purposes. One of the benefits is it doesn't crack or expand when exposed to hot climates. That is why it is widely used across the country, particularly in central and southern regions where temperatures can often exceed 45 degrees Celsius. The quality of fire clay is assessed by its levels of impurities. This company can produce some of the highest-grade fire clays in the West Asian region with around 75% purity. In general, when the material is extracted, it is then transferred to the Research and Development Department where it is tested for quality. One of the competitive advantages of this company over similar firms in this field is the quality of its products that match international standards. This holding company has created dozens of direct job opportunities over the years, and hundreds more people are indirectly hired as well. Out of some 50 fire clay mines nationwide, this mine has been the only producer that extracts its products along the lines of exports. This company has faced many challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Some are related to the fluctuation of domestic raw material prices. As part of its future vision, it has also overhauled production processes to optimize outputs. Besides the mine we just talked about, there is one other major fire clay deposit which is located in Charmahal Bakhtiari province. This mine offers 12 million tons of proven reserves, and it is set to produce some of the best quality refractories in the region. Each year, a combined average of 300,000 tons of fire clay are exported. Iran's tile and ceramic market have become very attractive with rapid socioeconomic development in the West Asian region. Also, there is an increasing need for new housing units in neighboring countries. There are some of the things that are driving Iran's export market in this field. So the country has stepped up its production to gain a larger share of the market. We looked at the latest figures from the Ministry of Industry to gain more insight into the productions in this field. Data showed that in the year 2020, roughly 400 million square meters of tile were produced in Iran. Such productions were estimated to be worth nearly $450 million. These productions were more than local needs, so nearly 160 million square meters of tiles were exported. Industry participants say that this sector is presently operating at only half of its total production capacity, adding that it has high export potential. With this in mind, the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade is working with the government to find ways to expand its markets through production. The goal is to increase production levels by 300 million square meters over the next 4 years. Analysts estimate that this will generate an additional $2 billion in foreign revenues if the strategic sector taps into the full capabilities. Fire clay does not only feed the tile productions. It also supplies raw material to manufacturers of sanitary ceramic ware such as sinks. Iran currently makes copious amounts of these items. In fact, in the first half of last year alone, over 70,000 tons of sanitary ware were released into the market. Going off on information from the National Customs Administration, these items were mainly exported to neighboring countries.
The country's light and heavy construction sector is booming with construction materials in high demands. It is worth noting that domestic raw materials, such as fire clay, meet 100% of Iran's construction needs. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are some statistics on the construction materials market.
Iran's steel, cement, tile, and ceramic industries produced more than twice the country's internal needs. Last year, exports of these items raked in some $10 billion in foreign revenues. Tile, glass, and ceramic exports composed some $3 billion of total exports. Steel exports accounted for the rest. That's all based on statistics from the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. On another note, the country's mega mining and metal sector, which also supplies the construction sector, has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. Industry participants say this was mainly due to the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which led to more focus on other sectors. Much of this expansion is in large part made possible by linking research institutions with manufacturers. This step was critical for sharing knowledge in collaborative product development. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taken years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries.
All right, everyone, now I will pass it over to my colleague who has prepared an interesting feature program for you all. Let's take a look.
You definitely have a clear image of a concrete or a steel structure, but when it comes to tensile structures, you most likely cannot picture anything. They're self-standing structures, carrying only tension and no compression. Mostly made of membrane or industrial fabrics, they're most often used for roofs and canopies, creating unique private and public spaces. Mahout is the name of an Iranian company that makes all kinds of tensile structures. Tensile structures can cover vast areas. While they're lightweight compared to other types of construction, they're extremely strong. Tensile fabric structures are designed and engineered to withstand even the most severe weather conditions, providing protection from both rain and sun. Mahout says its products are made using the latest technology and high-quality materials, on par with their international peers. Mahout has under its belt a dedicated team of experts who are constantly exploring new trends and efficient designs for eye-catching yet resilient tensile structures. While the Iranian brand has a strong foothold in Iran's market and is eyeing higher horizons, Mahout says it's working to undertake international projects. offering a unique landscape for outdoor eateries, restaurants, and coffee shops. Tensile structures are beginning to attract more attention in the architecture industry. This means the future market will be lucrative for the actors in this field. And Mahout says it will stand out, as it believes quality is in the details.
There is so much more that can be said about knowledge-based products, so let's take a look at some news and trends in this field. You have probably heard the phrase NFT, or non-fungible tokens, being thrown around recently. The very first Iranian NFT issuance platform was established and launched in the country.
The platform is called Bita. It was created by a company in the field of developing digital technologies in the information communication technology sector. Bita digitally certifies artistic and non-artistic works in the form of non-fungible tokens. The developer says it plans to increase international access and grow the platform's ecosystem to determine accurate asset values. People can purchase NFT that are backed by authentic art approved by the system and sold at auction.
Most people don't think twice about fungi, but what if it could be used to help treat diseases? Well, an Iranian knowledge-based company has managed to come up with the technology to produce rare medicinal fungi.
This company focused on producing four species of medicinal fungi. Once cultivation conditions have been established, these plants can be mass-produced. Its medicinal properties will be used in the form of tablets and capsules. These fungi have the potential to treat liver disease, immune deficiencies, diabetes, and some skin diseases. Plus, the four species can now be cultivated in 3 months.
The number of cars and pollution increases as cities grow, and one way to manage this issue is to create specialized technology. Domestic knowledge-based companies and startups have developed 17 innovative products to improve road traffic and reduce air pollution.
The products were developed to address the rising number of vehicles and inner-city trips in cities nationwide. Some of these smart products are used to record traffic violations, collect traffic information, and license systems for restricted traffic zones, among many others. Smart traffic monitoring systems have also been developed by these companies.
We are fresh out of time for our program for today. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you right here next time for another edition of Bazaar.
Arabi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Arabi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Arabi English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, welcome to Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. One of the keys of life is maintaining the sanity and the immaculacy of our brains, keeping our brains healthy and fit. We have many hadiths from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam and narrations from the Quran that says that sometimes we do things that makes me and you lose our mind and lose our intellect. So we spoke about alcohol, and alcohol itself is a form of intoxication where a person no longer has the capacity to think rationally and control himself. The Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they say not only intoxication when it comes to alcohol, but even sins become intoxicating, which means that your common sense is no longer there. When a person loses his common sense, he's intoxicated, right? Even though he has not taken any form of drugs or any forms of alcohol, but just not having common sense itself is what we call intoxication. A hadith from Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi as-salam, our seventh imam. Look at this. He says, "Inna Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala lam yuharram al-khamr lisamiyha." Allah did not forbid people from drinking alcohol for alcohol itself. Then how come is it haram? Then we ask. He says, "Walakin harramaha li'aqibatiha." He forbade alcohol for the result of it, for what it makes you do. Why? He says, because when a person becomes intoxicated, what happens is he loses his mind. He loses his brain. So alcohol itself, he says, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not care about the actual thing. Rather, the effects that comes after. Then the Imam Salamullah Alayhi, he draws a rule, like a general rule in this regard. He says, then anything that has the same effects of alcohol is also haram. So if it's a sin that makes a person intoxicated, if it is drugs that makes a person intoxicated, sometimes having too much fun makes a person intoxicated. Why? Because people lose sense of track of time and track of reality itself. When a person indulges himself in too much social media, for example, for hours and hours, they're just being nothing but zombies on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook and Instagram and all this. That's a form of intoxication. The brain is no longer functioning. Your eyes are. So the Imam says, alayhi salam, he draws that general rule. He says, anything that gives you the same effect of intoxication is also considered to be khamr. So khamr, sometimes it could be the literal alcohol, and sometimes no, something else you could be doing, but it has the same notion and the same effect of that of alcohol. So we have to be very careful when it comes to maintaining our brains and maintaining the functionality of our brains. We need to take it quite seriously, because without a brain, we bring ourselves down to the animal kingdom. Let us take a short break, and then we will continue right after.
Ayatollah Javadi Amoli, the author of the book Mafatih al Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام همونطوری که این رو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دو ثواب داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدر گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون اینم همون امام گفته دیگه
When growing wheat take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. We are still talking about maintaining our brains and the functionality of our brains and our mental health when it comes to the brain. Imam al-Qalim alayhi salam, in a hadith, he says, if they overcome three things, a person will destroy and destruct, self-destruct his brain and his intellect. One, من أظلم نور تفكيره بطول أمله. He who kills his logic with having high hopes. I mean, having hopes is a good thing. You know, it makes us work. But sometimes having too much of it, or having hopes that are not realistic, that just kills your wisdom. So you need to, I don't know, be more realistic when you dream. I mean, try to wake up and dream, not to stay asleep all the time. So that's one. Two, the Imam says, وَمَحَا طَرَائِفَ حِكْمَتِهِ بِفُضُولِ كَلَامَهِ. He rubs out and he deletes his own wisdom with the amount of talking that he does. Now, talking is part of life. We need to talk. But talking too much, talking extra, talking when it's not required, talking just for the sake of talking, that will definitely kill the brain and kills wisdom with it. So a person, the less he talks, the wiser he is. And don't take my word for it. Look at the hadith of the Ahl Bayt in this regard. And I will just leave it there. Three, the Imam says, وَأَطْفَأَ نُورَ عِبْرَتِهِ بِشَهَوَاتِ نَفْسَهِ. And he turns off and extinguishes the light of seeking morals and lessons of life by letting his desires overcome him. So the more a person is in tune with his own desires and pleasures, and that's all he cares about in life, then obviously he has not learned anything in life. Okay, because life and all the things in it are just lessons for us and for me and you to learn from. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran, many times, over and over, he says, don't they look at the nations before them, civilizations before them, people before them, so they could get this ibrah, this moral lesson, this value. Obviously, if my main concern in life is just to indulge myself and have as much fun as I can, then what kind of lessons am I getting out of life? What am I learning out of life? Obviously nothing, because all I care is about myself. And we have to be very careful not to deprive ourselves of our own humanity. What separates human beings from angels and from animals is the fact that we have intellect and we have a choice. Animals have no intellect and no choice. Angels have no choice. We are the only creatures that Allah made that have both. So the hadith says from Amir al-Mu'mineen, he says a person, or Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says a person could elevate himself above the angels if he uses his brain and his intellect correctly. Or he can bring himself below the animals if he just indulges in his desires and his pleasures. Allah in the Quran says it beautifully. كَالْأَنْعَامِ بَلْ أَضَلُّ سَبِيلًا. They are like animals, but worse off. Why worse off than animals? Because animals don't have intellect. Animals don't have a choice. What they do is they are primitive animals. They just go by instinct. They are pre-programmed, where me and you are not. So brothers and sisters, let us take a good care of our intellect and our brains. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.